And we are live on Blog Talk Radio. No, it's not Thursday. Special Saturday edition. It was a crazy week. Give me a break. We're still going to get into everything we're going to get into this week. A little bit of an update on a few things. Things that I was just going to report on Thursday. If happens now. As long as I remember, I'll tell you what I'm digging here lately. We got the Derby up here at the original studio, actually. I happen to be on this side of town. Decided to hop on in for a visit and going to do the show from Impact Media Studios East, I guess, if the other one's West. Impact Media Studios, good to be here. Good to be around you guys. Good to finally talk sports again. Now, of course, I talk sports all week. But being able to come on and speak with you guys, it's therapeutic in a way. But in another way, it's great to be able to bring up these topics that, and maybe other sides of them, maybe things you guys aren't thinking, or maybe you're not a big hockey fan, and I talk enough about hockey to where maybe you've caught a game now. Maybe you were unaware. Maybe you were unaware of an issue going on in sports that suddenly we come to the forefront and let you know about. But either way, like I said, it's fun for me. Fun to hear you guys when you guys give the feedback, or I run into some of you guys at different events. And you guys, first of all, I appreciate that, the things you guys say. Yeah, we always take constructive criticism as well. There's been a few times like, hey, I like how you do this. I think it would be better if you did this. Hey, we've tried some new things. Some of them stuck. Some of them we're still working on. This is not an imperfect podcast, and in no way will it, or this is not a perfect one, and in no way will it probably ever be. But we try our best to bring the other side of things to you guys and to give you guys something to listen to and something to talk about. Now, I'm going to start with the board check portion. And I know I keep saying this, but next week, probably early week, I don't know exactly when, Tuesday or Wednesday, I would imagine, board check will be split off. But for now, let's talk some board check, right? All right, since the last time we were around, tons and tons and tons of things have happened. Let's start with the Boston and Columbus series. This is all round two that kicked off. In game one, you got Charlie Coyle who ties then wins it versus a more aggressive Columbus. Columbus was very aggressive in this game, but Charlie Coyle would not be denied. Dude is starting to break out a little bit. Be good to see what he does going forward. Let's see. Last Saturday was game two. It was a super back-and-forth physical battle. The Blue Jackets grabbed the win in the second overtime. It was Duchene that had the winner 3-2 in that one. That evened the series. Game three, which was Tuesday night, the Columbus Blue Jackets dominate. They take the lead into the third and hold on to it 2-1. It was a nail-biter of a game. I really thought at one point Boston was going to tie it. Looked like Brad Marchand had a good chance. Pasternak, a couple of those other ones, just could not get it to go. So Columbus took the 2-1 series lead there. And in game four, which was on Thursday night, the Bruins keep the Blue Jackets on their heels, and they even the series 4-1. It just seemed like all the momentum that the Bruins had towards the end of Game 3, they used for Game 4, and they were able to even up the series. Game 5 is actually tonight at 7:15 on the NBC network. We know it's going to at least go to Game 6. That will be on Monday. And if they go to Game 7, that will be on Wednesday. But that's been a pretty beefy series. It's definitely been a lot of fun to watch and be a part of that one. Let's go to the St. Louis Blues and the Dallas Stars in this has been a pretty back and forth one too. All of these have been really close, with the outskirt of one, and we'll get into that one in a minute, happily. One of St. Louis versus Dallas, the Blues just steady scoring. Just they really got out to a good lead, and then Dallas caught up. Their catch-up attempt was just a little short. They threw everything they could towards the net, just trying to get any kind of thing to drop. They come up just a little short. That one, 3-2. Tarasenko had the big effort in that one. So St. Louis goes up 1-0. In game two, Dallas ties it up. They had a 3-1 lead late. St. Louis gets the second goal late in the empty netter with 3 seconds to go. Sealed at 4-2 for the St. Louis Blues. That evened up at one that series. Game number three from Monday night. Physical, even battle. It wasn't even really rough. It just very physical, very shove you around type game. Kind of old school for the way a lot of people describe it, although I think that's how hockey should go. The Blues grab the late win 4-3 on a pretty cool goal. So they were up 2-1 the series. Game four, which was Wednesday, the Stars were just great at transitional goals, and that led to their 4-2 victory. Which evened up the series 2-2. And then game five, which was last night, Stars were able to find a way to win that one on the road as well. They go up 3-2 in the series. They won last night 2-1. So to update those two real quick, Bruins and the Blue Jackets are tied at 2. Game number five is tonight at 7:15. Blues and the Stars Stars hold a 3-2 lead in the series. Tomorrow at 3 is game number 6 on NBC. That's a 3 p.m. start there. Let's go to the San Jose Sharks Colorado series. I really didn't think this would be as close as it has been. I was wrong. Sharks in game number 1, which was last Friday. They kept the first round momentum. They just dropped the hammer on the Avalanche, win 5-2 in game number 1. In game number 2, Colorado was pressing hard. They're hard press and possession in the first is what I really liked. San Jose was able to get a goal. San Jose was balancing more in the second, like balancing out more. The Avs get 2 deflection goals, and Colorado punches in punches one in. Burns had the big hit. He had the big slap shot. Colorado empty netter. And the Bruins second slapper with 10 seconds to go. Burns' second slapper with 10 seconds to go made it close, but the Avalanche hold on for a 4-3 victory there to even it up at 1. Game number 3 from Tuesday night, Logan Couture hat trick. Just paved the way for the San Jose victory over Colorado 4-2. That was 2-1 up in the series on that one. And in game number 4 from Thursday night, the Avalanche just smothered the Sharks to even the series at 2. They were just on top of them every time they turned around. And that was 3-0 on that one. Game number 5 is tonight on NBCSN at 10 p.m. Man, these late games are just limiting my sleep, but there's no way I'm going to miss them. And then finally, we're going to go game by game, but I bet at this point, especially if you're in the studio, you can see the shirt I was wearing, you would know how this series has went. You have New York Islanders coming in off. They're one of the hottest teams coming into the playoffs, one of the hottest teams after their performance in round 1 against the other super hot team, the Carolina Hurricanes. In game number 1 from Friday, it was a very balanced, early, even-keel game. Teams traded momentum, and then Jordan Staal had the overtime winner for the 1-0 victory. I think part of the steam of the Islanders started to evaporate at this point. Game number 2 from Sunday, the Isles strike first. The Canes get 2 in 48 seconds to start the third period, and they end up winning that one 2-1. They go up 2-0 in the series. Game number 3, it was just pretty much all Hurricanes for Game 3 and Game 4. The Owls keep it close through 2, then the Canes surge ahead 5-2. Game 4, pretty much the same thing as Game number 3, 5-2 in both of those. And yes, that means in the second round, our Carolina Hurricanes swept the New York Islanders and are awaiting the winner of Boston and Columbus in the Eastern Conference Finals. This is a team that hasn't been in the playoffs in, what, 10, 12, 14 years, something like that. And all of a sudden, not only back in, they're the only team who has advanced so far, and they await the winner. So congratulations to Hurricanes. Congratulations to all the people I know as part of the that organization, you, the fans, everything. That's been fun and fantastic. Just fantastic. Let's see, what can we move into next? I do want to talk a little bit of NBA. I got one little baseball nugget, and then we're going to talk draft and United, I promise. As far as NBA, the only series that has really garnered a whole lot of my attention is mainly because I've been watching hockey. Now, to be fair, I watch hockey over about everything, and it just seems like I haven't been able to get into as much basketball, although I've been able to keep up and tell what's going on. But the Houston Golden State series it's been interesting. It's been entertaining. It's had a lot. It's just had a lot. We all know the Warriors are the odds-on favorite to win the whole thing. We all know that Houston is potentially the one who could knock them all off. There we go. We all know. I make sure I had it pulled up. Game 1, Warriors end up winning 104-100. That's probably not only a lot higher score than they really want to get into, but that's a lot closer than they want it to be. You look at Game 2, 115-109. Hey, that's only 6 points. Once again, 6 points. Reggie Miller famously scored 8 points in about 10 seconds, so that's not that long to score six there, but they are up 2-0 in the series. They do play again tonight, 8:30 on ABC. But the things that have intrigued me the most about this series is Houston is using every card in the deck to try to beat or get some sort of advantage on Golden State. They've mentioned getting calls to the refs or mentioning not getting calls about the refs. They have this study where younger refs are gave them more calls during the regular season than the more veteran refs. And, of course, the more veteran refs are the ones in the playoffs. So I get it. But if you notice, there have been a lot more calls than a normal game both games of this series. In fact, in this entire playoffs. You got Steph Curry, who suddenly is getting 4 and 5 fouls in games when he averages about 3. Steph Curry. Now, granted, a lot of his are reach-ins, but Draymond Green's going to play hard, so you know he's going to get 4 or 5. I mean, there's a chance, you know, he could foul out of these games at this point. Even Kevin Durant is getting calls for and against him. So for James Harden and the Rockets and everybody to talk about the officiating, if they really crack down, I think you guys would end up fouling out first and just the style you play. But they're trying anything they can because they know they need that extra little edge. I mean, as we can tell, you lost game 1 by 4, you lost game 5 by 6. At this rate, you'll lose tonight by 8. I don't think so. I actually think the Rockets are going to get a game or two in this series. They're going to show everybody that that as good as Golden State is, if Kevin Durant does leave, they're very vulnerable next year. They'll have to play a slightly different style than what they do. But, you know, like I said, as far as the NBA is concerned, Houston is the one who could probably do the most damage to Golden State. And if they don't get them in this series, then I think you got to still keep them as the odds-on favorite. My little Major League Baseball nugget. The Orioles' Chris Davis, who famously at the end of last year all the way into the start of this year went like 0 for 55 or 0 for 60 or something like that. Then he was on the Dan Patrick Show just a couple weeks ago. Ever since, he's like hitting 300. He's had a couple home runs, like 12 or 14 RBIs. He is suddenly on a tear. Suddenly on a tear ever since being on the Dan Patrick Show. And I don't think enough credit could be given. I mean, at a time, they for a couple of days had talked about his slump he was in and there's something needed to break it. And so they just made the decision, hey, let's just have him on anyway. Maybe he'll be a good sport. And, you know, he was. Chris Davis is a really good guy. But it seemed like something, I don't know. I'm not saying it was actually the Dan Patrick Show appearance, but something just clicked. People don't realize that in baseball, hitting 300, that's 3 out of 10. Imagine if your job was set up that way where you could be successful 3 times and be unsuccessful 7 times and be considered not even good, not even really good, considered great in your field. Can you imagine if you're a barista at Starbucks and you get 3 orders right and you mess up 7? Yeah, that's called unemployed. If you're a used car salesman, or if you're a car salesman in general, if you sell 3 and you lose 7, you're probably not a car salesman anymore. So just think about that. Just think about that. In baseball, we have to view things different ways. Everybody talks about the big contracts. And, yeah, Chris Davis here, he has a pretty big contract. It's not Bryce Harper style. It's not Machado style. Nothing like that. But it was going to come around. Law of averages says he was going to start hitting. And now that he does, he's going to catch up, and his numbers are going to even out. But congratulations to Chris Davis and the Dan Patrick Show. And then, you know, thoughts and prayers – And just, I don't know, just, and congratulations, I guess, to, from Dan Patrick, from the Dan Patrick Show, when he said, you know, for the last 7 years or so, he's been dealing with a condition. And once he finally figured out what the condition is, he's been undergoing some treatment and things now, and he feels a lot better and he feels like he's on top of things. But for him to come out live on a show and tell people, hey, for all you have been concerned and said, you know, maybe something's a little off. Yeah, it was. And I've done something about it. And now that I know what it is, you know, if other people think they have similar things or similar symptoms, they should look into this as a possible answer. But for Dan, he seems to always be at the front of things like this anyway. But, you know, glad he's doing better, not just for the sake of his show or that he's one of my favorites, but he really does make things a lot better for a lot of people. So once again, good for you, Dan, and thoughts and prayers with you. While we're still on baseball, let's talk about one other little nugget, which is part of why the show got shuffled to now. On Monday night, a good friend of mine and my wife's ever since Christmas said that he wanted to get his dad. His dad is a good friend of mine and my wife's as well. My wife grew up with the whole family. Said he wanted to get his dad to a Braves game because he's a big Braves fan. He's a bigger Yankees fan, which is why we get along. But he'd never been to SunTrust Park. And if somebody's been a handful of times, I try to get anybody new to it because it's a fun place. It really is. I enjoy it. all the different places so far outside of Mercedes-Benz for a Falcons game. I've been to all of them. They're fun places. So Monday night ended up being the best time because his the son, he had a couple sons. The one that was trying to help pull this off lives in Orlando. He happened to be in town for a week. So it fell into place. We were able to go check out the ball game. It's always fun to me to go. I like going with people that have been, but I like going with people who haven't. And we sat actually out in the left field bleachers, not far from where Ozzy Albies hit the home run. Right there near the scoreboards and everything. It was a great time. Shout out to the Braves staff for making things very accommodable and very great. And I actually did something Monday night that is very, very outside the norm for me. We decided that at the end of the seventh inning, we were going to leave early. I am one who will stay till the ushers kick me out, usually. We decided to leave early because we wanted to check out Wahlburgers, which is right there in the Battery. Ever been to Wahlburgers? We're all huge Wahlberg family fans. Those people are some great people, and we never got a chance to eat there. So we were able to go there and check it out, watch the rest of the game, the last two innings there, watch everybody else leave, avoid traffic. It was great. And I got to say, to the Wahlburgers people or Wahlberg's burgers there, we all had various burgers there, and each one of us was highly impressed. In fact, I took part of mine the next day for lunch, and it was still fantastic. So, shout out to the Wahlburgers people, and we will definitely be back. And I will definitely keep that in mind. That it, like I said, it was definitely a good time. Definitely a good time. Now let's talk. NFL draft. I'm not going to get all into it because by now, even by Thursday, I wasn't going to do this, but by now, you've heard somebody overanalyze what your team did, what they didn't do, if you like it, if you don't like it, or you probably had a chance to go over the stuff yourself. Some things that stuck out to me. Obviously, a couple of the quarterbacks, the Daniel Jones thing, I think it's overblown. We're not going anything till that kid puts on a helmet and throws a pass. And then we're not going to know anything till preseason when we see him do it on an actual NFL field. But keep in mind, the Giants actually did something, even though it was a year later than they should have. They actually did something because they know that if Eli drives off the cliff, Thelma and Louise style like his brother did, you got to have somebody. At least they can go, well, we'll give it a shot. We have somebody to care. So, the Daniel Jones thing, okay. The Kyler Murray thing, if that's the horse that the Cardinals want to hitch their wagons to, then that's fine. I've seen the kid play a little bit. He could be exciting. They still don't have much of an offensive line over there. That may be part of why they went with more of the mobile guy. The Josh Rosen saga is just baffling because there's two sides to this. There's the... This kid's highly talented, and nobody's giving him a chance because he played on a really crappy team with a bad line, so he got killed last year. And maybe in Miami he surges. Or B, maybe it really is a hitch in his giddy-up. It's because of watching the Derby that I keep saying all these horse references. Maybe there is a hitch in his giddy-up. Maybe there is something to where... As highly talented as he is, he can't quite put it together. Now, for the sake of the Dolphins and honestly the sake of Josh Rosen and the sake of just football in general, I hope it works. I really do. I hope it works. I hope a change of scenery and onto a team that seems to be a little more behind him, I hope that helps. But you always got to keep in mind they're passing on him for a reason. they're passing on a guy who was drafted in the first round last year. Now, once again, I don't think he's a bust, but maybe he's not as good as people think. Or maybe he just hasn't been given that chance. Some other things that I liked. I liked where all the Michigan guys went, not just because I'm fans of Michigan, but Rashawn Gary and seeing Winovich go to New England. Yeah, the ultimate role player linebacker, tons of passion, really good head on his shoulders, and he goes to New England. Look at that guy's going to be a monster, a good one. As far as the Falcons, they focused early on the offensive line. I think that was something they needed to address. I didn't have a problem with that. They were able to address some other things down the road. I talked to a handful of Falcons fans in the last week, and I said, you know, as of right now, given everything you know, what are you worried about your team? Because I brought up, maybe special teams. You are swapping over to a different kicker, even though we like Tavecchio. I like Tavecchio. He's a good, solid kicker. At some point, you had to move on from Matt Bryant. You might as well do it a year early than a year late. And if you didn't go ahead and lock up Tavecchio, somebody else was. I said maybe special teams, but you got the same long snapper, same that kind of stuff. The only thing with special teams is usually those are the third and fourth string guys that are on those squads. So not knowing who the third and fourth string guys are, we'll just have to see. But some of them said, losing Coleman, they know they have some other running backs, so they're a little cautious there. They were okay with defensive backs. A couple of them said, the pass rush. Okay, I can see the pass rush. And sure, there's free agents. There's some other people. Here's the thing I always tell people this time of year. Everybody, every team, all 32 teams in the NFL have 90-man rosters right now. 90. What is it, 53 you can put on the active roster. About another 10, 12, 14, 15, something like that can be on a practice squad. So, okay, what, 50 and 15 is 65 plus 3, 68. 68 from 90, that's 22. So each team, we're going to do some quick math here. Each team, all 32, are going to cut down from 90 to 68. I mean, they're technically going to cut down to about 50, 53, and then they're going to hire those. So 704 people are going to get cut. Now a lot of people go, well, those are all people that got cut. Yes, it's true. But think about it this way. If you have five good running backs, we're talking, let's say your top running back, your starter, he's an A or an A-, and your number two and your number three, they're B and B pluses, and your number four, he's a C+, and your number five, he's also a C+, but why do you need five? So even though he's a C+ with a B+ mentality and B, could really be something, you have to cut him because we don't need to carry five. We're going to carry four because we're actually going to put three on the active roster and the fourth guy is going to be on the practice squad. I don't care if all five of them are Bs. You still end up cutting one. Well, somebody else looks who maybe their best one, maybe their starter is a B or a B+, and they got a bunch of Cs behind him. But, man, they really like how this guy runs because, to me, you're either an outside, you run outside the tight ends and tackles with speed, or you run up the middle with power. You're either up the middle or you're an outside runner as far as running backs, the way I look at them. Well, let's say your starter is an outside guy. The two guys backing him up are inside power guys. You need another outside guy in case something happens to him. So maybe you pick this guy up because of that. All I'm saying is the 704 people or so players that are going to get cut, not all of them are getting cut because of their abilities. Some are cap casualties. Some are, moving on from a veteran. Suddenly a veteran comes available and you're like, yes. Like Osi Umenyiora coming here to Atlanta. Derek Shelby, a lot of free agents sign here because their other teams passed on them for various reasons. So your pass rush is going to turn around because you're going to end up signing some of these guys. You still got Grady Jarrett. You still got the other guys. Falcons fans, be happy with your team because everybody's healthy. Knock on wood right here. Everybody's healthy currently. And everybody said you guys were perennial potential Super Bowl favorites last year until all those injuries. Well, nobody's injured at the moment. All they did was get a year older, and I'm not that worried about the ones who got the ones, you know, the Julio Jones, stuff like that, and Matt Ryan's. I think you're going to be good. But also keep this in mind about a draft. We're not going to know how effective the draft was for years. For years. It's just like if you were hired on Monday and they did an evaluation on Friday. I'm not going to know what kind of employee you're going to be. I'll have an okay idea based off 4 days, but I don't know how you're going to pan out in 4 days. Just like if we just had the draft, I'm not going to know for a couple years, at least two or three, if you're going to pan out. Maybe by three or four, we start to determine if you're a perennial Pro Bowler or a potential Hall of Famer or a franchise quarterback or a league leader in the interceptions, a cover corner, you know, these varying things like that. So let's just keep that in mind. It's fun to get excited. It's okay if you want to react the other way. But these things are not perfect. Neither are the people in. Now I'm going to go. There's a couple teams that I think could be in trouble this year. And what I mean by that is these are NFL teams. The ones that, because if the rug gets pulled out from under them, it shouldn't. I don't think it'll be that surprising. These are teams that are really going to have an uphill battle this year. As far as the AFC East, I would say the Dolphins. I don't think the Dolphins are going to win a lot of games. I think they're going to be effective. They're going to be competitive. I don't think they're going to win a lot of games. And there's a chance they don't. I mean, they do. But the Jets, the Bills are going to be pretty decent. And I think the Jets, they only won 4 games last year. The Jets could go 8-8. And we all know about New England. But I'm not even going to say the Dolphins. A team in trouble, the Cincinnati Bengals. They got the new coach, the new philosophy, but he's got to flush out some of those players that should have been flushed out years ago. And he's got to change the culture. And I think you got Pittsburgh who's going to rebound. You got Baltimore who's loaded up. You got the Browns still hanging around. I think the Browns are not going to win their division. I still think they're looking about a 7-9 year, something like that, about what they had last year. But uphill battle. AFC South, I think Jacksonville, you did solve a need, but you've lost some other players, and I think your window is all the way down to a crack now. So Jacksonville, you got a long way up. It looks like Tennessee is going to be solid. Indianapolis is probably going to win the whole division, and Houston's going to hang around there. The Oakland Raiders, yeah. The Oakland Raiders, it's a lame duck year. Nobody's going to go to these games out in Oakland. The ones that do, congratulations and kudos to you guys as fans because you're willing to kind of forgive and forget just because that way you get to see NFL action. But I think Oakland, they're behind the proverbial eight ball. I think Denver is also, they've hitched their wagons to a couple different horses. Maybe Flacco will be stable enough to help them out there, but they're defense is getting older. Von Miller is probably looking at the last season or so he's going to be there. I don't know. It's not looking good for Big D. You look at the New York Giants. Daniel Jones thing included. They needed defensive help. They didn't really go get any. They need offensive line help. They didn't really go get any. A few new receivers and running backs and things to help Daniel Jones and Eli out, you didn't really address it. So throw the Giants in there. The Washington Redskins, you have like five quarterbacks on the roster. I mean, not to be outdone, the Giants have like eight punters and or eight kickers right now. Let me check my phone to see if I got an invite. Nope, not yet. I'm sure it'll be coming. But no, Washington, they say Colt McCoy could be the starter. Okay, well, you also got Case Keenum in the building. You also got Dwayne Haskins. And there's another guy that I just can't remember off the top of my head. I understand camp arms and stuff like that, but clearly you're not keeping Colt and Case. And Colt's been in the building a lot longer, so I don't know why you would trade for Case thinking that you could not only draft the guy coming up in Dwayne Haskins, but now you have one potential starter down the road and two really good spot starter backups, and then whoever the fourth guy is. So Washington and New York, you guys are definitely in some trouble this year. Honestly, I think the NFC North is solid. The Bears are going to drop a little bit. The Vikings going to probably be right around where they are now, about 500. Green Bay is going to be right back on top. And Detroit is a wild card, but not a wild card team. They are the I'm not sure what they're going to be, but I feel like they're going to be a little better than they were. NFC South, Tampa knows it's going to have some issues. It'd be interesting to see how long they stick with Jameis Winston. It'll have a lot to do with his progression, obviously, but how long before Bruce Arians tries to do something different. But I wouldn't really say they're in trouble so much. And then the Arizona Cardinals. The Cardinals know about their issues. And I also got to throw the Seattle Seahawks in there, because the Rams are going to be good. The 49ers are going to be a lot better. They had four wins last year. I could see them up in the 8-9 range. All their people are healthy. All they did was get better. Turns out Kyle Shanahan is a hell of a drafter. Shocker. But Arizona is at the bottom looking up. Seattle is probably looking at second or third place at best. I mean, they got to hope for the Rams to go on a slide, because I think San Francisco is going to run this division. But to recap, the teams that I think are kind of on the low end looking up, they're going to have some issues this year. Cardinals and Seahawks, the Giants and Redskins, Raiders and Denver, Jacksonville and Cincinnati. I said, it's going to be fun this year. And, of course, we never know anything. Things could change in the blink of an eye. Lastly, but not leastly, let's talk some Atlanta United.
These guys are warriors.
Swig of tea there for the working man. And that's right, Coach. They are Warriors. The Atlanta United took on the Colorado Rapids the other day. Here's kind of the way I saw the game playing out. I liked the early possession and the press of United. It was a lot more urgency than the last few weeks. United passes, they were just a hair late. They were, just behind or just in front of the surging players, whether it was Martinez, whether it was Villalba later on, whether it was, whatever it was. It seemed like they were just a hair off from where they should be, which means they're getting closer. Obviously, being 0-0 at halftime, I thought that was okay, because it seemed like they were still on the aggressive side, because Colorado tried to attack early with a few presses here and there, and then as the United coach Frank DeBoer said, they didn't park one bus. They parked two buses in front of the goal. And they very much did. And as John Nelson from Soccer Down Here would say, they not only parked two buses, they tipped them over, slashed the tires, and set it on fire. They just dropped into defensive mode, and they were okay trying to get out of there with a 0-0 win, which actually played to the advantage of Atlanta. They were able to attack and possess a lot more, get a lot more things going. The second half opened with aggressive chance that just misses. Gressel had a header that went right to the right of the goal. Better chances were developing early. As the game progresses, United was stacking up the great opportunities. And then in the 75th minute, you got Gressel with the fantastic goal, as I believe Barco was dribbling up the left side, got all the way to the goal line, and out of bounds goal line, and kicked it back towards the front. Gressel ran in and caught just enough of it on the toe to tap it in. It was a great goal. The substitutions really paid off quickly, because right before then there had been a couple substitutions as Villalba and Rometty came in. Penny Martinez was taken out, and they showed his frustration on the side as he actually kicked the back of Breck Shea's chair, which Breck Shea was like, "It's cool, bro. You know, Breck Shea's good like that." He came out as well. But his thing, he was upset. I liked the passion. As some of his teammates have said, nobody wants to come out of a game, and a lot of people react that way. It just happened to be caught on camera. I don't have a problem with it whatsoever. I think Pity is getting closer and closer to playing a full 90. And, you know, I think sky's the limit as far as that. Let's see. Atlanta hung on for the win 1-0. This is the first win at Mercedes-Benz this season. Wow. Yeah, that's why I wrote that down. Wow. But I thought it was, they're starting to put more things together. They're starting to put more things together and play more of the style that we're going to see. They're starting to get used to things. They're starting to possess the ball and pick their spots like they're really wanting to. And they're only a handful of points out of playoff contention. So I don't have any problems whatsoever with the way everything's going. Your upcoming schedule, it does get a little interesting. Tomorrow at 9 p.m. in Kansas City, they take on Sporting Kansas City. I believe that game is on Fox Sports South. You might want to check, just, you know, make sure. On Wednesday at Mercedes-Benz, they will welcome in Toronto FC. That's a 7 p.m. kickoff there. And we'll have a show before then, but next Saturday, May the 12th, they host Orlando City at Mercedes-Benz. That should be fun. It's about a 2 or 3 week stretch here where they play about twice a week. So that's your Atlanta United update. We're going to lose a couple people, I think Barco and a few others, to the international tournaments coming up. There's an international break as well. But we're going to lose a few people here and there, so we're going to see some call-ups from ATL2. We're also going to see some shuffling of the lineups here. You're going to see some different looks. And also, Frank DeBoer has still been playing around with some tweaks here and there. So I don't have a problem with any of those. But that was all the things that I really wanted to get to. Oh, what am I digging lately? Well, I'll tell you what I'm digging lately. I am digging the NHL playoffs. Not for the sake of this show. Just out of pure enjoyment to watch as much and as many of these as I can. And also Wahlburgers. I'm digging that burger from Wahlburgers. So if you get a chance to go to Wahlburgers or Wahlburgers, whatever it's called, definitely do that. There's one in the back. There's a few all over the place. Probably Wahlburgers.com. Wahlburgers.com. It's the third brother. It's not Donnie. It's not Mark. But it's all family-oriented. Some really great things. I was looking at the rest of the menu, and it's all really good. So watch the NHL playoffs, eat your Wahlburgers, and we will see you guys early next week for Board Check, and hopefully Thursday for Sports Club. But we'll see you guys next week. Go watch hockey. Deuces, gooses. Hey, big girl, make a bag, get up. Yeah. Make a
I got them shaking they boobies like Congo, man. I'm shaking the city like Quake. I hate them blue in the face like Congo, cause I'm drinking the cake, so let's make.